This is Gareth Jones on Speed, episode 491. And we've got a lot to talk about. Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. Welcome to Wales. Croeso I Gymru, as that's where I am, and live from London. Welcome, Zog. Hey, brother, how are you?
Hey, getting by, thanks. How are you today?
Great, I'm fabulous. Do you know what I did today? Do you know what? I got up and I went out with Phil and Sonia, who I'm sharing with at the moment, and we drove up into the Conwy Valley and we parked up and they took me through a wood that was full of bluebells. There's a carpet of bluebells. As they're known in Welsh, Clychau'r Gog. We call them cuckoo bells in Welsh. And there's a song I know, Ar Fin Clychau'r Gog, on the edge of a sea of bluebells. And it's about falling in love. And it's by Gwilym Boyn Rhys, one of my favourite Welsh artists. And it made me think of that. So yeah, that's where I am, man. I'm at peace with the world.
And is your woodpecker still pecking the wood?
Yeah, there's a pair of them, I realise. Oh. There are two, and they're communicating with each other, because when they're doing that knocking thing, they're not just making a hole to make a home. They're saying to each other, I'm over here, I'm over here, I'm over here. And they've got a slightly different...
Is that intentional or is that accidental, though? Because, you know, obviously, if you're making a lot of noise by banging wood, you're giving away your position. But are you saying that's a... There's definite communication there? There's information content in it?
Lots of birds do that. That's why parrots are so good at mimicking each other's sound. They can acknowledge each other's sound over distance, so they can be seen, or you know where the other partner is in dense foliage, you see. And other birds do it too. Owls, when you hear owls, tweet, tweet, that's two owls talking to each other from opposite sides.
Birds are smart. No, yeah, I'm not questioning the birds being smart. I'm just questioning whether the knocking wood thing, it doesn't seem a very efficient way of communicating information. Are they doing Morse code? I mean, what's... If they're doing five pecks a time, you know, that's a one-letter alphabet. It's pretty hard to get any information across with a one-letter alphabet.
What is SOS in woodpecker? You can't do a long tap, can you? It's tap, tap. It's the gaps between the taps, perhaps.
And you could do something with... Anyway,
we're getting... fascinating. Hey, you've been watching Three Body Problem. How are we going to communicate with aliens when we can't understand woodpeckers, right?
Okay. Well, in all seriousness, because that is a very interesting question.
Yeah.
And the one thing I would say about that is that doing research into how we might communicate with whales, for example, may help us to get a better handle on how we would communicate with an alien civilization. Whales are a non-human intelligence on Earth that we are very confident has, you know, has culture, and they communicate.
Yeah.
If we can use AI, which is how we're going to do it, inevitably, to come to a better understanding of what whales are saying and to communicate with whales, that will surely feed into how we might communicate with any extraterrestrial intelligences.
Absolutely, yeah. You've got to start with the basics. Yeah, I read this report that you were alluding to there, and they've done, was it an analysis of humpbacks? And they think that they've narrowed down a couple of key, not phrases, but what's the word? Expressions that blue whales, sorry, humpbacks do. Was it humpbacks or was it blue whales? I can't remember. Anyway, listen, enough whales. You're communicating with whales right now. I'm sitting there in Wales, in Cymru.
He'll be here all week, folks. Don't forget to try the beer.
Listen, we really probably should mention motorsport at this point. And we should mention that a Welsh driver, Llando Norris, has got his first win.
Llando Norris is Welsh?
No.
Of course, everybody is Welsh. Of course. I mean, yes. Yeah, he's Welsh like everybody is Welsh. But, first win for Llando. What a moment. What a fantastic moment. And so well deserved.
And it was on merit. I mean, I know he was aided slightly by the timing of the safety car, and also aided by the fact that Max's car was apparently damaged. The underfloor was damaged when he collided with a bollard, so Max couldn't quite get the most out of his car. But he managed... Go on.
We're just going to come back to something. Okay, bollard. We're going to come back to that. That's not a bollard.
Right. Oh, sorry.
Well, it's a flex post, isn't it? You know,
Thank you.
He did a bollard, he wouldn't have been going any further in that race.
Yeah.
as an enthusiastic follower of the Twitter account of the World Bollard Association, I feel an obligation to point this out. One should not confuse a bollard and a flex post. It can be a painful mistake. Anyway, so...
Hey, Willow, that was a painful mistake. I'm in radio DJ mode. That was a painful mistake, certainly was, wasn't it, Tom, for Max Verstappen, who couldn't maintain pace with Lando. But that car is a race car, that McLaren now, isn't it?
McLaren brought a lot of upgrades to this race. I believe Lando's car had all of the upgrades, while Piastri's car had most of the upgrades, or half the upgrades, but not all of them. So, you know, so whatever the difference between Lando and Piastri is, yeah, the car certainly favoured Lando this weekend. But as you say, you know, yeah, he won that race on merit. Sure, he took advantage and the team took advantage of a safety car that fell very nicely for them. But they'd chosen to stay out a little bit longer. They chose to go longer on that first set of tyres to make the later stop. And then when the safety car came, when it did, that meant that he was able to come out again in the lead on fresher tyres than Verstappen and hung on to the lead for the rest of the race. In style, Verstappen wasn't catching him. Like you said, maybe Verstappen's car was a little bit hampered by damage, you know. But I think it was notable that Lando was staying comfortably ahead.
He put in some distance towards the finish line. Was it 6 or 7 seconds ahead?
I think it was about six. I mean, I remember a couple of laps before the gap had been sort of 4.8, you know, to 5.2 seconds a few laps before that, and I noticed it had been getting a bit. Greater, and I wondered whether Red Bull had decided we're not going to catch Lando. There's no point in taking risks to try and catch a car that we're not going to catch.
Yeah,
we're going to settle for second at this point, bank those points. He's going to win the championship. Red Bull are going to win the constructors, so they can afford to have a few races like that.
Yeah, Max kind of said, you know, if a bad day is second, then I'll take that. That's what he said after the race. And the mood in the pit lane after Lando's first win was very good. I mean, Max and Lando are pretty darn close, and that's really nice. Where your mate gets one, it's all right, mate. I'm still going to get the championship. He can have one.
He's a very popular driver, isn't he? With the other, he's a very popular lad in the pit lane. Everyone loves him, it seems. And you know, I don't know, but he really does. You know, he does seem like a lovely guy, and his crowd surfing moment as he, when he got out of the car, dived into his mechanics and was, you know, lifted on their shoulders, and you know, it was a wonderful, wonderful crowd surfing moment. There was a lot of joy, a lot of love in that moment. That was a really, really lovely moment, and let's hope we see a bit more of that in future.
I think we will. We might not see as much of it as we might like, but there is the likelihood that McLaren could get a win again this season if fortune favours them. If they, you know, they've certainly got a car which... Here's the thing. It's more than just the car. It's, I think, McLaren's continued rise over the last two seasons shows that they've got good correlation between what they predict to happen and what actually happens. Do you remember when the pre-launch season, they announced their car this year? And they said, yeah, but we're not happy with the car. Well, you haven't even run it yet. Now, we know this isn't the car. It'll be okay, but no, it's the B version that's going to... Oh, that was last year, wasn't it? Not this year, that was last year. Or was it this year between testing and the first race? But whatever, they knew that they hadn't got there, but they knew they were going to get there. They had a massive step up last year where they started the season with an appalling car. And this year, they started with a good car, and they put stuff on it, and it seems to be improving it even further. That means that they've got good correlation. This is where I think Mercedes are struggling at the moment. How many people did Mercedes have to lose? Was it 1,000 staff under the budget caps. It may not have been that much, but it's a lot of people. Ferrari moved theirs to their Le Mans programme and, of course, weren't helping out Formula One on the quiet. Of course they wouldn't do that. But I think that's why Mercedes are suffering. They don't have the resources they had before. And this correlation, because they keep thinking, right, we'll do this and this will work. Oh, that didn't work. Well, we'll do this, that'll fix it. Well, that didn't work. So their predictive ability seems to be what's at loss at the moment.
You say they don't have the resources. Surely the issue is more likely to be that their resources are just not being deployed in quite the right way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I don't think, you know, Mercedes is struggling for resources compared to McLaren. But
they're struggling compared to what they're used to, what they previously had, is what
absolutely,
I'm saying.
You know, a reorganization changes can, you know, can invigorate and give new energy to an organization, to a team, to a company, or it can be a difficult period. This makes me think actually of Boeing and the Starliner program.
Oh.
And Starliner, of course, which did not launch last night through, on this occasion, no fault of Boeing's. I think it was the United Launch Alliance
Atlas
V. Second stage? Yeah, upper stage.
Oh, the second stage is called the, what do they call it? The interim cryogenic stage, I think it's called.
I bow to your superior knowledge. I've got
that wrong. That's the SLS upper stage. The Atlas V uses the Lockheed Martin Centaur upper stage.
Just very quickly, for anyone that doesn't know what we're talking about, yesterday there was supposed to be a first launch of Boeing's Starliner crewed capsule to take astronauts to the ISS. And Starliner is one of two capsules that NASA commissioned under their Commercial Crew Program. The other capsule is the SpaceX Crew Dragon. They gave Boeing about $4 billion and gave SpaceX about $2.4 billion, I think.
Exactly right, yeah.
And long story short,
Crew Dragon delivered about 5 years ago.
Yeah, SpaceX has already flown many times to the ISS with the Crew Dragon capsule that they developed on that budget. Boeing still hasn't sent anybody to the ISS with their much more expensive Starliner capsule. And part of the issue is that Boeing, on this occasion, they had to work to a fixed cost contract. Boeing, as an organisation, is used to working with contracts where they can essentially, this is a little bit harsh, this might be a little bit of a harsh characterization, but they can essentially choose to take as much time as they like and spend as much money as they like because they get paid for all of the extra work. The extra cost is paid for by government
contracts.
It's in a cost-plus contract, is that what they call them?
I think you're right,
But on this occasion, they had to do it for a fixed cost, and Boeing as an organisation, it turns out, is incredibly bad at shifting to building things under a fixed cost contract.
So if I understand it right, the point you're making here is that Mercedes are in a similar sort of situation where it's a culture change more than just the money available.
As we're poking at this, I realize this may not be the best analogy I've ever come up with. But what I'm suggesting is that, yeah, that the change in the way of doing things, if you've got this big shake-up at Mercedes and they're having to do this big reorganization to deal with the significant staff cuts, that can force a lot of new ways of working, new ways of doing things, reorganization that isn't necessarily good for an organization.
Now, well, talking about big change, changes are coming to Formula One because Adrian Newey, now let's talk about the nuances here. It's been reported that Adrian Newey is leaving Red Bull. Now, that's the headline, right? Adrian Newey has not said, I am leaving Formula One. He's not said, I am retiring. He has not said, I am going to another team. It's just leaving Red Bull. Everybody's having the same conversation. Where's he going to go? What's he going to do? What do we think? What do we want to happen? they're going to be two very different things. I'm guessing, Zog, that you probably want the same as me. I really want Newey to go to Ferrari because that would just be the most incredible story in Formula One. I think that'd be amazing for Lewis to drive a Newey managed car or conceived car. I know, however, that you have got a very soft spot for Williams. When we were talking about this on WhatsApp the other day, I joked, he's going to Williams. Do you think that's a possibility? Would you prefer that?
Surely it's a possibility. It doesn't seem like it's all that likely. I think that would be great. And let's remember that Adrian Newey, he was at Williams previously.
Yeah. And why did he leave Williams? Because Patrick Head and Frank Williams wouldn't give Adrian any, I call him Adrian, any shares, ownership of the company. And that's what he wanted. He wants to be part of Williams. So I think he's going back to Williams on a, and you can have some of the company sort of deal. Possibly.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, I think it would be great to see him come back to Williams and to give Williams a boost that, you know, they could surely do with at the moment. That said, I think people are generally disinclined to kind of go back into positions, into jobs. You know, we tend not to want to go back to things in our life like that. I would be very surprised. I'd be very surprised if that happens. Also, from Newey's point of view, aren't Williams just a little bit too much on the back foot at the moment? You know, if they were showing more forward progress, maybe, which is why I think Aston Martin is more likely. I'm still being a little bit bloody-minded in my attachment to this Adrian's going to Aston Martin idea. Ferrari absolutely seems to be the bookie's favourite landing spot for him right now. And
well,
yeah, it would be tremendous to see him designing a Ferrari for Lewis Hamilton to win a world championship. How great would that be? Of course.
That would be fabulous. At the time of going to press, you know, this is changing day by day, this thing. There's more rumours and speculation and people trying to work out what's going on. But the time of going to press, you know, we still don't know. Nothing's been announced. But I bet you by the time this show goes out, we still won't know. And we won't know for a long time. But the thing that caught my attention the other day was a report that Fred Vasseur had had a conversation with Adrian Newey. And what he said was he'd offered a position as an Uber consultant. I think that was the term they used.
Uber consultant. He's not standing in front of the building saying, right, okay, you're getting in this cab. I'm going to go and get a pizza.
Adrian Newey's new job.
That is Adrian Newey's new gig.
But I think that was a key term because, as we understand, Adrian Newey doesn't particularly want to leave his home in England. He likes it here, there in England. I'm not there, but he likes it in England. And he travels well enough with the team anyway, so he's away a lot of the time. But as a consultant, in the way that John Barnard was for Ferrari, do you remember? He worked from Britain throughout the, early 90s, very late 80s. Barnard ran Ferrari's design department from the UK. And it's entirely possible this is the sort of deal that they're moving towards, which would make it a lot more appealing. I'm guessing, but that's my interpretation. And I think that's how you'd swing it. That's how you'd attract him. That's how you'd get him. Because he's away from home. He's 65. You know, he wants to sail around the world in this incredible yacht that he's designed. And he doesn't want to spend 10 years, 8 years, 5 years turning a team round, does he, at this age in his life? He likes a challenge.
He likes a challenge. I mean, let's not underestimate what Adrian Newey could do if he is inclined to do it, put his mind to it, put his will to it. That said, I can certainly see that if he cannot relocate, that would make the Ferrari move a lot more appealing. Who knows? I still think the Aston Martin thing might happen, but it is probably going to be Ferrari, isn't it?
Who knows? I can't wait to find out. I thought I'd do something different for you. Instead of having a sketch in the middle of the show, let's have an intermission. That was the sound of the door to Phil's closing, an old wooden door, an old Welsh barn. I know it's got nothing to do with cars, but Gareth Jones on speed can have slow moments too. Now, can you hear that? Birds. and sheep, of course. I was going to say it's gone very quiet since I've come out here. I can hear a quad bike or a motorbike, small motorcycle. Trying to find a point where you can hear all the birds singing, because there was a blackbird absolutely belting one out. Even the birds in Wales sing. I know birds sing, but Welsh birds must sing better, surely. Hang on. It's not as distinct as it was a moment ago. Hold on. Let's just wait. The sound of Wales. It's really good. I've got to get some of this bird song. Really have. You got a minute? Yeah. We'll get back to the chat with Alex in a moment. But I thought we'd experiment a bit with Gareth Jones on speed. We like audio landscapes. I've created the audio landscape of Le Mans for you. The high energy and violence of racing cars. For a bit of contrast, here's the peace and tranquility of birdsong. Proper birders would be able to tell me all the different species that you heard there. I don't know what they are, but it was lovely to hear and happy to share it with you. We now return you to the violence and noise of Gareth Jones on speed.
Gareth Jones on speed!
Joining the triumvirate of car weirdness is
completing
the
triangle.
Hang on, I'm trying to work this out. The bottom right-hand corner of the triangle, completing the triangle, yeah. Live from still fashionable London, despite the fact that I'm not there. This is the biggest intro you've ever had, Alex, isn't it? Alex Goy.
Hi. I mean, it's one of the longest ones, but yes, London is still fashionable. We've just had our local elections, and a man with a bin for a face beat a lot of racists,
that
so that's very
moment.
Good.
Very happy about that.
I was very, very pleased about that, and there was a very bitter speech, which was very funny. And it means that both Lawrence Fox and Dan Wootton have promised to leave the city. So, if anything,
Hooray!
The last week has been pretty stellar.
Win.
It's been lots of wins.
I was in London briefly for the last 4 days, a few days ago, and unfortunately unable to vote anymore.
No.
I'm not registered here yet, but I couldn't vote there. And I felt regretful. I wanted to do the right thing and vote and leave that as my parting gift to London. Carry on doing what you do. You're really great, London.
It's okay, though, Gareth. Britain First wouldn't have won even with your vote.
Well, I've always rooted for the Plaid Cymru candidate in Hackney, quite frankly.
Of course. Of course.
We should have one. So, listen, got to tell you, right, I've bought a car, I've bought a car, I've bought a car.
I saw on
car.
Your video.
What have you bought and will I like it?
You bought a cactus.
I like it.
I have.
And it's purple, isn't it?
And it's purple.
So you've got. I would say the joint first best colour, because they also did it in Stabilo highlighter yellow, which I approve of greatly. But purple is an incredible colour for a motor car, so I'm very pleased. How did you get to cactus? What was the thought process?
Well, the three options were the Mercedes GLA, the Skoda Yeti, or a cactus.
I mean, that's a fairly disparate group.
Well, the GLA, not the SUV, but the puffed up hatch.
Yeah, yeah, so the A-class
kind of
on stilts.
Up hatches. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I need more height. I'm down a country track at the moment here, and you always need that to get over the rise, and there's a rise at my gate. You know, you need a bit more height.
Right.
And the cactus I turned down because, whilst it's a brilliant and sensible, economical, practical, voluminous short choice, it does have a slight whiff of, I may have recently retired, about it.
The Yeti.
The Yeti. I meant the Yeti.
The Yeti.
Forgive me. Yeah, the Yeti's got a slight hint of I may have recently retired. The GLA, you kind of, well, it doesn't quite offer as much room inside as it does outside. It's not optimum. So it had to be a Cactus.
Yeah.
And I love the Cactus when I tested it in 2017. It's a minimum automobile. It's a Citroen. It looks like you might want to go surfing, not like you're going to go and visit a dog show. And, and you know, I want to be young and fashionable, baby. And it's purple because purple was Violet's colour. I'm red. You think about Whizbang TV, the company corporate colours are red and purple. I'm the red element. Violet's the purple element.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, whilst Violet and I are no longer together, that means I have to reclaim the colour purple.
Okay.
So, taking ownership of purple. And it's great. I went for, this is the controversial thing, right? I went with there are basically two engines. There's a 1.2 three-cylinder petrol engine or a four-cylinder diesel engine, turbo diesel. And I wanted the turbo diesel. And having driven it, I counted some advice. And a sage man, I think he's called Richard Porter, said that a mate of his had had one, and because of the long gear stick, which I really enjoyed, it's, you know, floor-mounted change in the Cactus, I enjoyed that sort of industrial quality. It felt like robust and like a utilitarian. But he said, after a while, that gets a bit tiring. And I went, all right, I'll have the automatic.
Right. How do you find the automatic? Because I spent a lot of time in Citroen automatics back in that particular era, and the face you're pulling...
It may be the worst automatic gearbox I've ever experienced.
It's not brilliant, is it?
You didn't get an automatic one. You got a manual shift Cactus, didn't you?
No,
I bought the automatic. Oh, okay, okay. My mistake.
Yeah.
Mistakes were made this day, audience.
It does have paddles, and I found that if you drive around the incredible flat spots as it changes from first to second to second to third to fourth. Mm. If you drive around it, use the paddles, keep it revving, stay ahead of it, change early, you can drive it with a bit of fluidity. Otherwise, every time you put your foot down, you pull out of a roundabout, it goes accelerate, lurch back.
There is a trick to that gearbox, because it's the same robotised manual that was on the C4 at the same time and the C5. It was Citroen's jam. And because that was sort of kicking around beginning-ish of my career. The trick is, every time you either pull the paddle or you think it's going to change, just lift off and let the clutch do its thing and then put it back on. So treat it like a manual, because it is a manual. It doesn't make
that
it any more fun.
That is how we're driving it,
But that's how you do it.
You can't push through. If you've got a surfeit of power, my Sora, which is an automatic, a proper slush box, with, you know, a six-cylinder, 3-litre engine, produced enough spin and push to just force through any gear change silkenly. Mm. This is a whole new experience, and it's a relatively small engine. There are bound to be compromises, but get this, guys. Drove from London to North Wales in less than 20 litres. I'm getting 66 miles per gallon out of it at the moment. That's worth billions, isn't it?
If you think it's worth billions, you know, I think I may have an accountant for you.
I'm talking yen.
That's amazing. That's tremendous economy. Good stuff.
And the suspension is joyful. It's soft and floaty. And you know what this gearbox means? I'm slowing down. And you know what? Any roads with street lamps over them here in Wales, almost every single one, is a 20-mile-per-hour speed limit. So I just arrive gently, set the limiter, and I'm wafting my way around at the moment. I'm in no hurry. Mm. Actually, went to my lockup today. I've got a storage unit.
Where you keep all the bodies.
All my gear's in there.
It's where Gilbert the Alien and all of his family are currently hanging by the fingertips.
Yeah, well, there's some truth in this, yes. Certainly the Get Fresh archive is in this box. So I just went there now and loaded up the car with a whole bunch of things, and we came up the 500-foot climb to the top of Pensachnant, where I'm staying at the moment. Just on the paddles, it was great the whole way. Properly laden car. And my God, after the long drive from London to North Wales in time for the Grand Prix on Sunday, I was like I just stepped out of a journey 5 miles. That car's really, really comfy. I remember with the manual, I couldn't quite get the seating position right. Felt slightly twisty. But with the automatic, I think it's on the semi-automatic, it's less critical. You're not using your left foot. So I found a comfortable position. It's a real lazy boy car. It's a floater, man.
It's a floater. Okay. Hello. I remember it being incredibly light and feeling incredibly light. Like, it seemed that they put nothing extraneous on it. Because wasn't it designed just to be abused in French car parks?
Yeah, yeah. That's right. It's got the air bubble thing, whatever it's called.
They're called air bumps.
Air bumps. Yeah. It looks like a Lilo, like someone glued a Lilo to the side of your
car.
But
in a good way.
Exactly. Hey, Zog, you and me, right, you look at a Citroën GS or a GSA or a Visa, and you think, oh, amazing instrument binnacles, oh, fantastic suspension. The other way around, I know. You know, everything that Citroën have ever done, that's not true. There have been a litany of wonderful oddball Citroëns. And this is another one in that tradition, and I support that, where everything is becoming so homogenous. It's an oddball car. You know, like the original Multipler, when they refreshed the Multipler, it made it look almost acceptable, which to me was unacceptable. The early Multipler I would buy, the Series 1 Cactus I would buy, but I would never buy the
new version of the Cactus. I'm inclined to agree. Yeah. I think, you know, the original version has some real character. You know, it might not be for everybody, but it has a real strong visual identity, a real good distinctive look and character, which has got very, you know, blanded out and homogenized on the newer version.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've 100% got the good-looking Cactus there.
Oh, yeah.
Woo-hoo. I bought it in Essex, actually, in Essex. I was looking for this particular spec, this particular model of the car, and there were three in the country. One in Llanelli, which you think, oh, that's near. Yeah, it's only 111 miles away. Takes 6.5 hours to get there from North Wales on the train, or 6.5 hours to drive there from North Wales on the train. I'm top left Wales. You've got to come out of Wales, go down England, come back in Wales, and go all the way to the west of Wales again to get there.
You couldn't have bought a car further away from where you live.
Yeah, it would have been the furthest in any direction, the longest distance it would take
short
to get.
Going to actual France, which would probably be easier to get to from where you live.
So I didn't go to Llanelli to pick that one up. That would have taken forever. And there was one, I think there was one in Congleton, which is pretty nearby. Congleton. Sounds like it should be in Africa, doesn't it? It's Cheshire. Was it Congleton? But I spotted that there was one in Essex and that I was going down to London for 5 days anyway and had half a day spare in London. So I thought, I'll go and look at it. It meets all the spec. It's going to be okay. I went to look at it and it was a giant, horrible gravel parking lot in Romford, actually, which is where it was. And Haseeb, the guy who dealt with me there, was straightforward. I have to say, he was really straightforward. And we came to an agreement over the price. And I went to drive off in the car and realised, hang on a minute, half the sound system isn't working. So I spun back in and they let a guy called Fez look at it. Took me about 20 minutes, very methodical, worked it out. There was a misconnection. One of the cables had pulled out of the back of the audio unit.
Check the simple things first.
That was it. Fixed that. And then I went to drive off again and realised that the sat-nav didn't know where it was. It couldn't see any satellites. By this point, it wasn't time to spend any more time fixing that. So I'm going to look into how that will be fixed. I think it's a connection between the sat-nav unit and the aerial. It's just not seeing it. It could be fixable with a software update, a flash, which I'm sure I can take care of. So, work in progress. I love him. He's called Joshua.
Joshua the Cactus.
Do you know why?
Joshua Tree?
Correct. You know me well.
I accept my points with grace and fervour.
Yeah. It's because when I drove the Cactus, the manual one, back in, I think, 2016, 2017, a piece of music that I used against it was a Gareth Jones on Speed as U2 piece of music with all the vocals removed. And I said something like, this is the coolest thing named after a cactus since U2's Joshua Tree album. That was it. Anyway, so enough. I will tell you how it goes. So far, loving it. Nothing has disappointed me apart from not being able to get the sat-nav to work yet.
Well, good luck with that. And let's keep us updated. Be interesting to hear how it works out. Longer term.
I kind of genuinely thought about your reaction when I bought this car. I thought, if I get a purple one, Alex is going to love it. Yes. You're going to be happy for me. If I get a citron, Zog, you're going to love me. You're a citronista,
absolutely,
aren't you?
Yeah, yeah,
no,
I love it.
You love citron. Yes, we all are. Bravo, merci. Right, so that's the history of road cars, my road car. Should we talk about the future or not of motor racing, Alex Goy?
Yeah, go on then. So I was in Abu Dhabi the other week doing some stuff for the Motorsport Network about something called A2RL, the Abu Dhabi Autonomous Racing League. Now, while I say the stuff we were doing was part of the media thing, so we were interviewing people and we were chatting. Yeah, I basically spent a week in and around Yas Marina talking to the teams and watching these cars go by. And then obviously we were there on the day of the race, the big race, the 27th of April, I think. And there were a bunch of events went on. So the cars did some time attack stuff, and then Daniel Kvyat was there because he's involved in the project. He drove a human-driven version of an A2RL car, because of course all the A2RL cars are autonomous, and this is a project that's been going on since last year formally, and a bit before as well.
And the cars are spectacular internal combustion engine. They're super formula,
yes,
chassis, which is like somewhere in between F2 and F1. They are really proper quick cars.
It's a modified Dallara super formula car. It's got a 2-litre turbocharged Honda motor, 550 horsepower. They do 185 miles an hour, proper gearbox, all the nonsense. Like, it's a legit race car. I was hanging around in a garage and was basically prodding stuff because it looked good. And yeah, no, it's very real. So yeah, we had Kvyat versus a machine, and then we had, for the first time ever, four autonomous cars on track racing each other. There were eight teams there. Only four would go through. So it was two Italian teams and two German teams, if memory serves.
Yeah. There was an actual quali session, wasn't there? So they had to qualify for the race.
Yeah.
Let me just give this some context, if I've understood it from what I've been following. I tried to watch the highlights of the event, but it didn't really show me very much of cars on track. So I watched the whole thing more or less in real time.
Yeah.
And what I think most people would expect is four cars going hell for leather around a racetrack, just like Formula One cars dicing in and out of each other.
Yeah, wasn't that?
And that's not really what this is about.
No.
This is about writing the code to allow race cars to occupy the same piece of track and to take that technology and spill it out into all autonomous vehicle uses, road otherwise.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, do you remember the great egg race on BBC2?
Heinz Wolf
would say, we must now build a machine that can transport an egg from here to here and then turn it into a pancake. You know, and it's kind of like a demonstration of a challenge. Okay, see if you can make this work. And it will evolve into a race series. Is that fair?
So yeah, this time round they were saying basically they've programmed the car to do laps the circuit, they have a controller which will figure out what way to go and how to deal with things. They've got this big autonomous stack which basically sits in the cockpits, loads of computers, there's 360 degree cameras that help it see, there's LiDAR, but it's not a sort of repurposed Tesla autopilot with some spit and some hope on it. It's actual legit kit, it's legit tech. Everyone gets the same car, it's the coding and the programming that is on them to do. So it's a race to see how quickly they can make it work.
Yeah, do you know what? It reminds me of the X Prize. Do you remember how the X Prize gave us the beginning of a new moon rush, or a new orbital rush, I should say? You know, it was, what are they called? Virgin now. It was Bert Rutan's early version of the Starship, of what's it called? Spaceship One. It was called, that was it, Spaceship One. It's kind of like that. It's going to lead to something, but here's a key question, right? We'll come back to the details. Zog, is an autonomous racing series going to be as good as a human racing series, and why, or won't it be?
In a word, no. In a lot more words, look, I mean, the reason why, well, we can get to the detail of this event in a moment, and we must get to the detail of it and how it could be improved or developed or whatever. I have some thoughts. But look, I mean, one of the reasons that we care about motorsport is that there's a human being in the car who you can imagine, you can, you know, you can, you do imagine yourself doing that thing. And one of the reasons that it is thrilling and exciting is that you recognize that it's incredibly hard for a person to do that. To do it consistently, to do it without making mistakes, and to do that when they are risking their physical well-being. When you take the person out of that equation and you've just got a computer, an AI doing this, it is inherently boring. Now, this gets to a thing, because
I have two solutions.
As a motorsport event, as entertainment, this was not very good. You know, this was quite poor. Possibly even dismal.
This was not very good.
I mean, and maybe, Alex, you can, you know, you were there, so you could probably describe, you know, better than either Gareth or I can, exactly what happened during the eight supposedly racing laps. We will come back to that. But look, I mean, so as motorsport, terrible. As a research exercise, as a technology thing, fantastic. I mean, I was fascinated. I loved watching this. I loved watching this absolutely awful, terrible, worst ever race. But I didn't love it for the racing.
As I watched it, the way that it worked, the four cars in the final all followed the lead car out of the pit lane, did a few laps just to sort of acclimatise, warm up tyres, make sure that the safety level of
they
these
had two formation laps, didn't they? It was two formation laps, and then they were going to go green, or were they?
Yeah, and then there was going to be safety car laps, and then finally they were released. But at some point during one of the faster laps, one of the cars overbraked into a corner, spun, and suddenly all the other cars behind went defensive mode and said, "Stop, brake, right, now what do we do?" And it kind of killed that moment. There was some passing and overtaking.
Well, okay. My memory, if I can sum it up very briefly, as I recall it. So you have these two formation laps where four autonomous cars are driving very slowly, line astern, preparing to go green. Then they slow a little bit more, as I believe they had technically a yellow flag condition before going green. They slow a bit more. As they slow a bit more, the two cars at the back of the field slow even more. One of them comes to a halt. Then when they go green, the two cars at the front take off at, you know, a slightly faster rate that they were going, but certainly nothing that looks like racing speed. The other two cars don't move. And then by the time those first two cars are almost catching up to the two stopped cars, they kind of get going again. And then the lead car outbrakes itself for no good reason. They stop the race, they come back into the pits, they get going again. And then when they get going in with three vehicles, the lead car just stops in the middle of a corner. And the TUM vehicle overtakes them. But yeah, but it seemed like these autonomous vehicles, they were massively confused by the conditions around them.
But you know what? So would anyone driving a race car for the first time. That's how I see it.
Honestly, the thought I had in the moment was, you know what? A well-trained bird could do better than this. And this got me thinking.
Flocking. It's about flocking, we have to isn't it?
You know, you asked the question, Alex, is do you want a series that doesn't have human races, that's just non-human? Okay, I say we double down on this idea. We're not going to dismiss it on the basis of this extremely disappointing racing debut. We double down on the non-human racing series.
Agreed.
You can have any animal or AI drive your vehicle. It can be an octopus, a well-trained bird, a fish,
a rat.
Dog.
I've seen rats drive.
Because I remember reading about goldfish being trained to drive their tank around a lab. A team at Ben Gurion University of the Negev in 2021 published a paper in behavioral brain research. A team at the University of Richmond in America in 2019 trained rats to drive. And in 2012, an animal rescue charity in New Zealand trained three dogs to drive around a circuit.
They were driving in mini Countrymans.
The dogs, as I understand, they were even operating the gear shift, which would obviously be, you know,
brilliant,
pretty easy for an octopus in the right circumstances. So this is all good. Let's double down on this. Let's get the animals in there. Let's have some real competition. Okay. Let's have the AI against the birds, against the goldfish, against the chimpanzees.
I love it.
There are going to be some ethical concerns about this, but come on. Wouldn't you want to see that?
Have you been drinking, sir? You're an octopus. Of course I have. I'm processing up water to extract oxygen. Yeah, the way I would see it, you have to do one of two things. If you need the human story, because what we're talking about here is the non-human race, if you think about it, that's what this should be subtitled, the non-human race. You've got to make superstars of the coders. You've got to make them the heroes. You've got to make it like a reality show where you have access to these people. This is Dave. He's 19. He built his first radio when he was 2. He decided to write the code for his own security system at home when he was 9. Dave is your coder. This is Julie. She is the queen of code. Give it a human element. Or do what they did with Robot Wars. Have you look at the cars? If you look at the cockpit, they've got all these cameras and sensors and things. For heaven's sake, make it look like a Cylon's helmet. Give it a face, write a smile on it. Give it a name like Racinator or Bender.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
Okay, but that's only going to work, I think, if you lean into the robot drivers, no humans are at risk here. Okay, hey, no rules, yeah. Do whatever the hell you like. You want a rocket launcher on the front of the car?
Yeah.
Have a rocket launcher on the front of the car.
Yeah, I'd settle for just good racing, but with character from autonomous entities that have a personality. Because as Star Trek fans, all the autonomous entities, all the AI that we know has a personality.
Okay.
Right from the very beginning, right? In Star Trek, they had a computer that had a personality.
But that's sci-fi, that's not reality. As much as I love sci-fi, I don't think you're going to get any personality out of an AI racing vehicle. Now, that first thing you're talking about, you know, let's focus on the coders, let's focus on the engineers who are building things. That's yep. reality TV. I don't want reality TV. I want racing.
You want heroes.
And, somebody that works in this field might have more of an insight on this aspect of it. But it struck me that there could be a real difference here between the way that human intelligence and artificial intelligence could work here, in that when a human makes a mistake in a racing car, you know, they're making that little mistake that just makes them go a bit wide, and that lets the other driver just get on the inside in the corner and then make the pass.
Mm-hmm. We are imperfect.
When an AI makes a mistake, it thinks it's on the other side of the track and it just starts driving the wrong way. Or it just suddenly takes a hard left because it's lost the GPS signal and hits the wall.
At the moment.
Yes.
Yeah, it will do that now. But at the same time, if you put a child next to some knives, it will pick one up and run around with it because it doesn't know what it's doing. These cars have got like a year's worth of development on the max. This is, you know, much as EVs themselves are frontier technology, this is proper frontier tech. And admittedly, I will put my hands up and go, yes, the Polymove car running out of internet and stopping is not ideal for the first ever race. But there was a spell when they were racing together. They were putting in, 2 minute odd times, which no, isn't a lap record, but it's still damn sight faster than you or I could probably get around it in a similar car, because I'd be shitting myself.
Yeah.
This is year one. The overarching organisation has said they're going to put 4 years of commitment into it. Ideally, the very last year, there'll be a race in Japan, a race in Europe, and a race back at Yas Marina, because they want it to be a global series. But I sound like I'm reading a press release, but there's kind of three elements to this. The first is they want to make AI tech better, and the way to do that is through competition and saying, we'll give you lots of money. The second is to, if kids are watching it going, I want to make a race car do that, and I can't be a racing car driver because I wasn't born in Switzerland to a former Formula One driver, so that avenue's closed. I know, I'll program it. And the third is obviously to make Abu Dhabi look really good because it's racing league. So the first two are kind of legitimate reasons. The third... Yeah, yeah. It was their idea, it's their money, fine, whatever. But I think writing it off after one NAF race...
No.
I don't think it's the fairest thing to do.
Yeah, and we're not.
A lot of people will be.
We wouldn't dream of it, would we, Zog?
Having been very negative about it just then... Listen, I am 100% watching the next race.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, it's intriguing.
As a technical exercise, it is fascinating and wonderful, and I'm behind it. But I'm sceptical that in the end, you know, you're going to get a tremendous racing series. You can get some great things out of this.
Mm.
But I'm not sure that in the end, tremendous racing is going to be one of those things. I'll be happy to be proved wrong.
I genuinely think it'll be fascinating to see what happens and how it develops.
Yeah.
Because it was cool to watch these cars go around without any... It's weird because you've got a car going down a back straight making all the noise and you look down, it's like there's no helmet there. There's just this blob.
Yeah. Hey, draw a face on it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what'll happen with another year of development under their belts.
Yeah, I'm with you guys on it. I didn't expect there to be great racing. I was hoping there was going to be a little bit more movement, but the fact that it's like a striptease, right? Ooh, we've seen what is potentially possible here. They might just do this. It's like watching Starship's iterative design approach. Oh, it got close, and the fact that it failed is kind of almost more interesting, but they will get there. And we've got to leave it there, boys. We're way over time. Oh, man, we had so much to talk about. That's insane. You've been listening to Alex Goy.
Bye.
You've been listening to Zong.
Goodbye.
And you've been listening to me, Gareth. Before we go, though, here's a return to something that we used to do on OnSpeed a long time ago. When a driver gets their first win, they get the anthem sung on this show. And I'm not going to sing God Save the King because it's just too dreary. So, for Lando Norris, here's a tune that I think could be his anthem. This is Lando, Hope and Glory. See ya. Lando, Hope and Glory, mother from Belgium, how shall we extol thee, who are born of thee, wilder still and faster shall thy lamps be set. Zac Brown, who made thee mighty, make thee mightier yet. Zac Brown, who made thee mighty, make thee mightier yet.
If you enjoyed the show, then please like and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor the podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whizbang.